Hey, it's your girl Carla Renata, aka the Curvy Film Critic. I'm in New York City at a press junket, but you know I couldn't leave y'all hanging. So if this is your first time joining me, click below for the subscribe button. And hey, it's your girl Carla Renata, aka the Curvy Film Critic. This is episode 91. Oh! Of the Curvy Critic with Carla Renata right here at Black Hollywood Live. If this is your first time joining me, please click below to the subscribe button so that you can get all the notifications and find out when your girl is going up live and large and in charge. But until then, let's go ahead and get started. We got a lot to cover today. I have so much I want to share with you. And the first film that I'm going to talk about is Bombshell. It is directed by Jay Roach. It is written by Charles Randolph. It stars Nicole Kidman, Margot Robbie, and my girl Charlize Theron. Now, this is the story of the takedown of CEO, Fox CEO Roger Ailes. It is beautifully done, I believe, because it brings to light the whole issue of when the Me Too movement got kickstarted. This was the event that kicked off the Me Too movement. And it was when Gretchen Carlson came out and said that Roger Ailes was harassing her. She sued him, and it became this whole thing. Roger Ailes is no longer with us. He passed away quite some time ago. But the story needs to be told, and it's an important story that needs to be told. It's great makeup done by Kazuhiro, who transforms Charlize Theron into Megyn Kelly. It's phenomenally freaky how much she looks like Megyn Kelly to the point where you think you're really watching Megyn Kelly in the film. It kicks off, the beginning of the film kicks off with the 2016 presidential debate, and that's when we find out about the shenanigans that are happening with Gretchen. And then as time goes on, Gretchen comes forward, but then Megan backs her up. And when Megan Kelly backs her up, that was the impetus that set everything into motion, really. This was a wonderful film. I really liked it. And it's not everybody's cup of tea. And some people are kind of over the whole Me Too movement thing, but that's not something that you get over. The harassment is real. Harassment can come in the form of men and women. The women in the movie, in real life, Jeanine Pirro, the Fox News pundit, even tried to shame one of the girls about coming forward. It's bad enough when you're being harassed by men, but when you get it from the women too, it's kind of like, I don't know. But this film is going to be released on December 20th, and I wanted to tell y'all about it and make sure it's on your list of things to check out. And basically, it's one of those things where ambition equals hard work. Oftentimes, when those two words are said in regards to a woman, all of a sudden we're a bitch, and that's not necessarily true. That just means we have ambition and we work hard. So, please check out Bombshell. It is being brought to you by Lionsgate and Bronze Studios. It is directed by Jay Roach. It is written by Charles Randolph and stars Margot Robbie, Nicole Kidman, and Charlize Theron. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, the soundtrack, by the way, is all made up of women's voices in a very staccato kind of way. So it's not your traditional soundtrack. So it's women independently singing. So I love this film because it's starring women, it's about women, and the soundtrack is all women. So check it out again on December 20th. A couple of films I'm going to talk about are coming out on Christmas Day. And because we also have Star Wars and some other things coming out next, Star Wars and Cats, I wanted to save that for next week as opposed to trying to jam pack it in this week. So Little Women is directed and adapted screenplay by Greta Gerwig. Greta Gerwig is one of my favorite filmmakers ever. I love her so incredibly much. And y'all know she did Lady Bird. She did a film a little while ago called Mistress America that I absolutely love. When I had an opportunity to meet her, I told her that. But I digress. Little Women is produced by Columbia Pictures, and it's a remake, the third remake of the classic story Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. It centers around this house full of women who are left alone to make ends meet after the father has been sent off to war. It centers particularly around the artistically theatrical Joe, who's played by Saoirse Ronan. I love Saoirse Ronan. She was in that film Brooklyn last year. I just love her. She's so, you can see the windows to her soul when she acts. I can't say enough about this young lady. I really, really enjoy her work. And it's exemplary in this film. I hope that she gets some love for that as well. Also, Florence Pugh is in this, playing the spoiled brat, jealous Amy. Perfection. To perfection. Timothée Chalamet is playing Laurie, and he's giving a completely different dimension to his acting than we see him in other things. We've seen him play angst. We've seen him be the king. We've seen him do all kinds of stuff. But him as Laurie is very compassionate, is very vulnerable. It's a very heartfelt role for him, and I enjoyed watching him do it. Yeah, so that's that about Little Women. And now we're going to talk about my favorite movie, Clemency. Clemency is one of my favorite movies of 2019. And you guys remember me talking about this way back at the beginning of the year after Sundance. I came back raving about Chinoya Achiuwa's screenplay and her direction and Alfre Woodard and Aldis Hodge's performance as well. Needless to say, I have not changed my mind. So I have two interviews coming up in regards to Clemency. And Clemency basically is a film that is centering around a warden's perspective of death row, of what happens on death row, and her compassion for the prisoners in that particular predicament. It's an intimate look into death row, I should say, through the warden's eyes is what it is. But today I have an interview that I did with Aldis Hodge and Alfre Woodard. Now, for those of you listening on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio, it's going to sound fantastic. For those of you watching on YouTube, it's going to seem a little funky because the camera was not on me. It was strictly on Alfre and Aldis. So you will hear my voice, but you will not see my face. But it's me. Y'all will know it's me. And for those listening, you're not going to see any difference. So here we go. My interview with Alfre Woodard, Aldis Hodge from Clemency. I saw an interview, Alfre, where you said life happens in between the lines. And I feel like a lot of that happens in Clemency with both of you. Mm-hmm. Both of you, and it's probably because you got big eyes like me, but both of y'all have the innate ability to convey a story with just your eyes. What goes on in the inside to make that come out for us to be able to see inside of you?
I think your thought, when you're acting for the stage, you want your whole body, your whole instrument does the gestures so that the person in the last row gets what you mean. Mm-hmm. In cinema, it is the thought. I mean, so you have to have some thoughts in your head. And that comes from doing your homework, doing the prep work. And for us, it was an intense gathering of and witnessing of people in the prison system, incarcerated, condemned administrators, the perpetrators of carrying out the sentences that the law demands and we pay for. And so we saw all that. And once she rolls the cameras, you can't, it can't help but come out of your eyes and your face.
This film was a true exercise in the theory that eyes are the windows to the soul, because it tells so much. And it, as a performer, if you don't have that internal connection to what is going on, what you're trying to say, what you're trying to convey, you won't read it in the eyes. The eyes tell the truth always, regardless of whatever else is going on around. So it was a wonderful, wonderful exercise in trying to use that tool.
Both of these films deal with capital punishment in a different way. Mm-hmm. One from the legal standpoint, one from the standpoint of the prisoner and of the warden. Has shooting this film, has going into the prisons to prep for the film, has it changed your mind on how you view capital punishment in this country?
You know, I know Bryan Stevenson. What, oh my goodness, is he a hero and a model for all of us that work for justice. And I loved that book and his whole life before that. So it's great that these two are coming up at the same time. We need to keep it in the conversation and in the zeitgeist. Mm-hmm. It didn't change my mind, but it certainly opened my eyes. I am always excited to be this mature and in my life and have a revelation, to be able to be to understand a point of view that is not mine, and it still isn't, but to really understand, respect, and appreciate it. And I found that when I met these women wardens. They come to their positions from mental health, from social services. They, in their presence, I felt calm. I felt like everything was going to be okay, because their compassion comes out in a different way, in the way that says, we're going to do this dignified, we're going to do it with order, we're all going to be okay. So I learned what it is to respect the other side.
Right. And you know, for me, I have my particular views, and I say it just helped to really reassure my views. This whole experience helped to reassure my views on capital punishment, but what it also did was help me to understand how to look at someone else who's in a different position than me and employ a bit more empathy before judgment, or rather even to question myself in terms of judgment. Do I have the right to judge? Do I have the right to voice an, or establish an opinion on this person from an inauthentic place, one that is ignorant, right? So I think that's what the power of this film is. It will help people to understand how to sit back and view people as people before their situation and understand the role we all play when it comes to the bigger problem at hand.
Both of your characters have two adjectives that are applicable in both situations, challenging and hopeful. You're both very challenged. You're challenged in your home life, Bernadine, Alfrey. You're challenged in your home life. You're challenged in your work life. You're challenged and hopeful at the fact that you have a kid that you want to have a relationship with one last time. Mm-hmm. You have this girl that you loved who kind of like, you know, kicks you down when you're at the lowest of the low. What is happening in your life that makes you challenged and makes you hopeful right now?
On the personal scale? all into the emotions.
Got you all in feelings.
I would say that's a tough question for me to answer right now, because I'm fully aware that where I'm at in my life is my choice, and I'm actually quite satisfied with my choice. My challenge is to maintain who I am and fairness, dignity, and trying to be a good man throughout it all. And you know, I have a family, my mom, my brother, my sister. We love each other dearly, and I have my responsibility to them. So I just want to maintain carrying out what I do, how I do it, in the best way possible. But these challenges I call champagne problems, because at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's a beautiful life. And it's not, when I say that, it's not about work, it's not about money, it's not about the glitz or glamour, it's about the power of choice, being able to do what you choose to do in a space with people you choose to be around.
Miss Alfrey?
You know, challenges, I'm good with a challenge.
We know this.
No, but even in a personal way, most challenges for me are spiritual. But because we're on this subject, one of my challenges in life that I cannot control is I'm challenged because I have a black son who is turning 26 in January. And the world doesn't know that he still says, Mom, will you play with my dreadlocks? Mm. They don't know that I read to him every night for his life till he went to college. And it's me having to trust and us having to know each other well enough and have had all the conversations to let him walk into the world every day. And people don't see that or recognize that. But how to get him out there, but not fill him with fear, anticipation, so he has total freedom and not walk around with other people's stuff on him. That's the only challenge I have. But I feel hopeful because my son is brilliant and smart and full of love. And, you know, he's 26, so he screws up. But he knows how to adjust. I'm hopeful because my daughter has turned into a beautiful woman who takes no prisoners, suffers no fools. And I am loved unconditionally as much as you can by another human being that is not your mother. And that's through my husband.
Oh, and I think that is a great way to end. Thank you so much, both of you. So, I was so excited to come talk to you.
Before we end, I have to ask what I asked you earlier, because you said you came in here, you love the movie, and I was like, look, What is the thing that surprised you most about the movie that you found to love the most?
The thing that surprised me the most about the movie that I love the most is that I forget that the people that work in that system, they're human beings like we are. They have feelings. They have struggles. Mm-hmm. They have inner turmoil just like we do. Mm-hmm. And when you walk into the prison system, you forget that. You just look at them as people with an attitude for no reason, and that's not true.
Opens your mind.
Has it changed your mind about
It's made me think twice about it. Yeah. It's made me think twice about it for sure.
That's why we tell these stories.
Let me tell you something. Me interviewing Alfre Woodard has been on my bucket list of things to do for quite some time. I was so incredibly excited to meet her, so happy I had the opportunity to talk to them. It was one of my favorite things to do this past week. So thank you, Alfre and Aldis. And next week, look out for the interview with Chinoye Chukwu, who is the director and writer of Clemency. 1917 is easily one of the films that I think is going to be a really huge Best Picture contender. That film is beautifully shot. It's directed and written by Sam Mendes. It has a beautiful score by Thomas Newman. And it's about these two British young privates during World War II who are given the impossible mission of giving a message to the troops in deep enemy territory about the fact that they're about to be set up in order to stop some unnecessary bloodshed from going down. You guys, I'm not a big war movie fan, and I went into it thinking, oh, this is going to be boring. I'm going to hate this. I love this movie. Absolutely love it. It has magnanimous performances by everyone in it. It's beautifully shot by the legendary Roger Deakins. And there's a way that they are infusing humor in the face of death that was very unique. It wasn't out of place. It didn't feel awkward. And it also graphically shows the effects of PTSD and the graphic injuries and things that happen in the course of that. I'm sensitive to these types of stories because my father did fight in the war. My father fought in Vietnam. I don't want to say what war because I always get it messed up and my mom always pops off at me and beats me for getting the war wrong. I think it was the Korean War, but I'm not sure. But at any rate, I'm always sensitive to these types of films because my father suffered from PTSD. I remember as a little girl so excited that he was home, going to touch him to give my daddy some love. And he jumped up and almost choked me because he was having one of those PTSD dreams, thinking he was someplace else. So as a daughter of someone who has been a soldier, I'm very sensitive to these stories, and they always resonate with me in a very personal and intimate way. So having said that, I feel like Sam Mendes's 1917 is definitely worth a watch, definitely worth a look, and you will love it so incredibly much as I do. Jumanji opened this week on December 13th, and it's reuniting my boys, Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Kevin Hart. It also stars Jack Black, Karen Gilliam, and the two double Ds, I like to call them, Danny DeVito and Danny Glover. And this is, it's a light and fluffy film. In the face of all that drama, honey, I needed something to fluff me up and give me a little giggle. And this did the trick. It is it's a sequel to the other one, Welcome to the Jungle, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. This one is called Jumanji, The Next Level. And it deals with these four people getting together again. They go back to the video game. They get stuck. One of them goes into the video game, and he gets stuck there, and then the other ones go to fix him. But it ends up being a body-swapping comedy with some really hilarious work from Awkwafina, Jack Black, Karen Gillan, Dwayne Johnson, and Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart and Dwayne Johnson are doing spot-on impersonations of Danny DeVito and Danny Glover. It's just really funny. It's hilarious. And all I have to say to you is it's great family fun. And two things, some really wild and out ostrich. There's a lot of ostrich action happening. I can't say the plural word, so I'll say the singular word. Ostrich. Ostrich and horses. That's all I'm going to say. But Jumanji is in theaters right now. You can check it out at any given time. and you'll love it. It's a lot of fun. Now, we all know Star Wars is coming up, right? Star Wars. Da, 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 da. I love me some Star Wars, as you very well know, because I talk about it all the time. But I was so fortunate to be given an opportunity to speak to one of the stars, one of the newbies in the Star Wars franchise. Her name is Naomi Ackie. She plays Janna. We had a little chit-chat. So this is going to be my sneak peek into Star Wars for you with Naomi Ackie, or Nene as I like to call her. Take a look and a listen at the interview right now. So, Nene.
Yeah, Nene, let's talk. Basically, yeah. Just call me Nene. Yeah.
So, Nene, let's talk. Yeah. So, I know you got a special talent that you broke out for J.J. Abrams on set one day. In appreciation for being cast as Janna. Can you break off a little piece of that for me, please? And thank you.
I literally... Yeah,
I kind of love you for that, and thanks, I kind of love the fact that I asked you to do it, and you were like, okay, I'm going to break it out.
Yeah, you know what, you've got to do it. When is there a better time than now to bring out my Chewbacca impression?
I kind of love you for that. Walk me through the day that you found out you had been cast as Janna in the final chapter of Star Wars, which is a franchise that was here before you even born, probably.
It was very quick. Turnover. I had three auditions, and on the last one, they had told me, I did a chemistry reading with John, and it was amazing, and it was at 10 o'clock at night at Pinewood, and JJ was on Skype, and they were like, okay, cool, well, you're going to find out tomorrow at 7 o'clock, so just, you know, go to bed and wake up and we'll tell you. And they just expected me to just be able to, like, sleep that night, and I woke up, and I woke up at 7 on the dot. I feel like my body knew. And then they called me and it was like, yeah, you've got the part. So I found out after my last audition, I found out the next day.
Okay, did you like scream? Did you turn cartwheels? Like, what did you do?
I yelped more so. and then I just cried. I cried. I think it was really meaningful to me because I've worked as an actor for a really long time as a jobbing actor. And you never know. You hope that something like this will occur, because this is, for me, even more than Star Wars, what it has opened up for me is like this whole world of opportunity that I didn't previously have. So it meant the world to me in my soul, like, and I felt it. And so my dad was there that day and I had a pizza because I knew I probably wouldn't have one of those for a while.
I would say not.
Listen, you want to look like Janna, you can't have pizza.
That's pure comedy. I kind of love you for saying that, but it's what?
It's
true.
The truth. It is the truth.
Hashtag truth.
Listen, you must.
There have been so few people of color in this franchise. Mm-hmm. I think maybe somewhere between 7 and 10. Mm-mm. What does it feel like, girl, to be added? People that include Forest Whitaker, Sam Jackson, yeah. Billy Dee Williams, John Boyega.
Candy Newton.
Yes.
Yeah, it's proper special. I'm so happy to be a part of that move in the right direction, but I also feel like these films and this franchise and others, that this is one step, but we need to keep pushing it and keep pushing those boundaries back. If I can be a part of that, the hopeful success of this film, people of colour are seen as talented, as interesting to watch, as bankable, then this will keep growing. Not like a temporary thing, but like a real, where this becomes a normal. That's what I want, really. And that's what I hope for with this character and any characters that I play in the future, is that this becomes the norm. So that one day we don't have to, you know, celebrate.
The few people that are there.
Yeah.
Okay, so speaking of people of color, I'm glad you brought that up. So there was an article that I read a little while ago where David Oyelowo was interviewed. Mm-hmm. And it was in conjunction with this backlash or this controversy people from the UK playing roles in films where, in his case, he's playing someone iconic. In Cynthia Erivo's place, situation, she's playing someone iconic. She's playing Harriet Tubman. So what do you, and this is what he said, which I thought was brilliant. Mm. He's like, you know, nobody said anything when Meryl Streep was playing Margaret Thatcher. Said anything when Daniel Day-Lewis was playing Lincoln. Mm-hmm. So what is your answer to those skeptics that have something to say about that?
There is something about being black and feeling a race that is real the world over.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can really empathize with that. And what I can only hope is that we do get to that place where we are not looking at each other and looking to blame each other and push each other out of the way, but look up and figure out that, wait a minute, there are people up there who are making decisions. Mm-hmm. That means that we are fighting over scraps.
It's like crabs in a barrel mentality,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but and it's not necessarily saying that, like, this is about, like, pushing anyone out of the way, but it's about being like, wait, there's not enough opportunity here. There is not enough wealth of knowledge about black history across the world. There are not enough stories being funded that are outside of the African-American experience, be it if it's in Europe or the UK or in the Caribbean. There are so many stories and such a wealth of knowledge before there was this attention on black pain and black trauma that we had empires. We had kings and queens and scientists, and that stuff is still there to be plundered and enjoyed and celebrated. And until we figure out that actually, if we come together and figure this stuff out to expand our horizons, we can celebrate blackness on a really wide scale. For me, as an individual, trying to be as ethical as I can with the choices I make is really important, because I can really appreciate the feeling that actually everyone has a right to feel represented by the people who they feel understand their authentic experience, and I would never want to step on the toes of that.
Your answer was very well thought out, and it was very heartfelt. I appreciate what you said, and I think the people that listen to my show and watch my show, they will appreciate it as well.
Yeah.
Girl, just to let you know, I saw you in Lady Macbeth. I was like, oh, yeah.
See?
I was so excited. So I just had to sidebar that for a second.
Thanks,
I just had to go there for a second.
Thank you, dude.
Yeah, I wish I could talk to you about that. Just
yeah,
that alone.
Me too.
Do you think that, so we got The Mandalorian on Disney Plus. Do you think Janet gonna pay a visit to The Mandalorian? I know you
Listen,
can't say.
I want Janet to have her own film. I'm not even being funny. Listen, everybody needs to get behind Janna, because Janna needs a film. I'm talking cinema, box office, hello, all around the world. Janna, capital J, make them back.
I cannot with you. And just to round it out on an even funnier note, what is your favorite Disney princess?
Tiana.
She's a
now
Tiana.
It is Tiana. When I was younger, when there wasn't, it was probably a mixture of like Belle and Ariel. But now that there's Tiana, I mean, that live action needs to happen. I really hope they make a live action.
You're giving me Tiana today, by the way. All day long. I can't. All right, we're good.
All right, Nene girl, you did that. Thank you, my sister. Thank you so much for answering my questions and for just having a good time and rolling with a sister. Star Wars will be in theaters on Christmas Day. Next week, I have interviews. Do I have any more? No, that's the only interview I have from Star Wars. I'll just do my review next week of Star Wars, and then we'll talk about a little Cats action. Cats. That's all I'm going to say. Digitally animated Cats. You know. Insti-who. So, up for some news. I talked about Jumanji a little earlier. Kevin Hart got his hand and footprints immortalized at the TCL Chinese Theater this week. I was there for all of that. So, if you want to check that out, please go to my Instagram account, IGTV, and I have all the footage from that event there. For Sama is a documentary that I covered here on The Curvy Critic earlier this year. It won the International Documentary Association Awards. So I want to congratulate the directors and the producers on that film. I spoke with them. If you did not see that interview, you can also find that at The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata on my YouTube page. There's an interview there with those directors. And I'll just throw it back up during the break so that you guys can take a listen to that. There were a couple of people that passed away that I was remiss in recognizing in the last week or so. Rene Aubin-Jouas, who was on Benson, he was in the Star Trek franchise, he passed away. Rob Liebman, who was in Norma Rae, he was 82. He was in Norma Rae, and he was in Angels in America. He passed away. And last but definitely not least, Danny Aiello. You guys may know Danny Aiello from Moonstruck and Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing, for which he was nominated for an Academy Award. He passed away as well. Rest in paradise, my brothers. You will be missed. So let's talk about this Richard Jewell and this banker controversy. So first up, the banker. You guys asked me about the banker last week. And basically what's happening with the banker is absolutely nothing. Apple has postponed the opening. Excuse me. The opening, it has postponed the releasing of that film, and the cast and the production people, producers behind that film have supported Apple in that decision. I'm sure that we will eventually see this movie. I saw the movie. It's an excellent film. So I'm hoping that, you know, whatever issues are going on with this scandal, that it will be resolved so that everyone can get a chance to see it, because it's beautifully done. Richard Jewell opened. And I talked about Richard Jewell last week. Richard Jewell is centered around the guy who was believed to be the bomber in the 1996 Olympic situation in Atlanta. There's been controversy around this film from all vantage points, but mostly dealing from the vantage point of Kathy Scruggs, who was the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reporter who broke the story. And people are not happy with how she's being portrayed in the film. So Clint Eastwood has come out and said something about it. Olivia Wilde has come out and said something about it. Everybody has had something to say. But at the end of the day, and y'all know how I feel about this, because I said this when Leaving Neverland came out, I really hate when people disparage the dead. I don't think it's fair. I think it's rude. I think it's disrespectful. Having said that, I could see why people are upset about the way this woman's legacy is handled in the film. And although I'm sure they didn't mean to portray her in that light or write her character in that light, if you see the film, that's how it kind of comes off. So hopefully everybody will stop getting their panties in a bunch about this and, you know, let everything kind of just do its thing. All right. Will Packer, one of my favorites, he did that movie with Queen Latifah I think it's called Girls Trip. Yeah, I think it was called Girls Trip. The movie with Queen Latifah and Tiffany Haddish, and it catapulted Tiffany Haddish's career. Well, Will Packer is back, baby. He's back, and he is producing a female-driven thriller called When I Was With You in association with his production company, Focus Features, and Packer Productions. It's based on a novel by Amber Garza. Yeah. And it centers on a woman named Kelly Medina who becomes obsessed with another Kelly Medina. Sounds a little single white female-ish, but you know, I like Will Packer and I'm down with Focus Features, so I'm sure it'll be really good and we'll be able to see everything about that. And there's going to be a Marvel tribute to Stan Lee on ABC this week, so be on the lookout for that. That is it, you guys. Thank you so much for joining me. I will be back next week. Next week, December 22nd, is the last day of studio stuff for AfterBuzz TV, Black Hollywood Live, and Popcorn Talk. We're taking a hiatus for the holidays. But you know, the Curvy Critic never takes a hiatus. So I will have shows for you on the 22nd, on the 29th, and then I'll be back live on January 5th. Next week, I will be talking about Star Wars, cats, and a couple of other things. It'll be a light, fluffy kind of show. And maybe, you know, some holiday classics that you might want to check out with the kiddies and with your friends during this holiday season. So, thank you so much for joining me for episode 91 of The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata. It has been my pleasure to reach out to you and give you another show from my perspective, shooting straight from the hip, so to speak. And I will see you next week. Love, peace, and hair grease, y'all. Until the next time, I'll see you on the flip side. Bam.